woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Hello, welcome to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell, Mr. Matt Weber on the board, along with his man, Jack Silverman. I also have Mr. Kevin O'Neill. S&P Futures up 14. Dow Futures up 113. NASDAQ Futures up 56. I'm shocked, Kevin, I'm shocked that your buddy Munchkin came out and said after yesterday's carnage in the market, don't worry, the China deal is 90% complete, and we flip right back halfway the other way. I want to know, when are we going to put somebody in jail for this?
That's darn good news.
It is, well, sure.
I mean, news. Not news like we've never seen before.
As you may recall, your buddy, who's the Tesla guy? Tells his name. We got him on brain dead. Musk.
The Tesla guy.
Elon Musk.
Yeah, thank you.
He tweets out one day that he thinks they're going to take the place private. All right, and the stocks run up. And I don't know if anybody even traded ahead of it. I doubt if they did. And the guy, the SEC is on him like white on rice. And, or stink on you know what. I mean, and if anybody does something like that, he's tweeting, he's doing this, he's doing that. And yet here we have I'm going to say, Kevin, that in this country, if you wanted to make it your life's work, you could always find, shall we say, areas where some people could do something and it was okay and other people couldn't. You know, if you're big enough, you always the law kind of worked for you. But by and large, you know, there was some semblance of morality that, you know, if one person couldn't do it, another person couldn't, type of thing. Yeah, I'll tell you what, one thing about this particular administration, and again, it's astounding. The laws you have in colleges and stuff regarding treatment of women and dating and things like that, and you have a president that gets accused of stuff every couple of weeks. Now, again, they are accusation. They're not proven. I get that part. But if this guy Munchkin, if this was a company, he could never do this. I mean, what if this deal doesn't come through this week? I mean, I'd be fired in a second, but if I was the head of the SEC, I'd want to know every single trade that came out of anybody near that White House. Because if all of a sudden last night you saw these guys buying, you know what, Kevin, it's just not right. I mean, this guy has no, but let the market, you know, I mean, not that it isn't news, and by the way, I really do hope there's a 90% deal complete, but do you think that he said it because it is or because the market was down yesterday or he doesn't care?
Well, and Tom, there's two potential reasons for doing that. One is just to manage the market, and on behalf of the administration, to try and keep it stable. You know, and by stable, I don't mean like it's going to fall apart, but I mean stable like, well, we don't want it to free fall. Not on any given day, not on any given week, etc. But the other would be to, you know, for insider trading, and despite your suspicions, I think we have to be careful with that one because there really has anybody presented evidence that that's happened.
I don't think
you'd want to see every trade that came out of the players in the White House. But the question is, you know, if we see it, then we probably should fly off the handle about it, and it's worthy ask. But I want to be careful not to accuse them of something that they haven't done.
I'm with you on that. I am with you on that. But I will say, Kevin, that this group is way too smart for somebody there to not know that these things are market-changing words.
I'd agree with that.
And I think that people front ran the Fed all those years in the Obama administration where they'd give some speech in the middle of the night in China saying, oh, no, they're really going to be softer interest rates. I think people find a way to front run all this stuff. I honestly do. Unless you're exceptionally careful.
And that's why I kind of tap dance around when I said that, is I want to be careful that, you know, that we don't accuse people of doing something that without evidence, but by the same token, I'm not saying it can't happen or wouldn't happen.
Well, I honestly believe that
because it very well might happen.
I honestly believe that the Trump fires out is not front running. I think he's doing it from his bedroom. I don't think he tells anybody about his tweets.
That I believe, absolutely.
So I'm not accusing him. I'm just saying there's some pretty smart boys in this White House now. The people around Obama might have been too dumb to trade it. Okay,
I don't think so. Well, I don't think so.
You know, but what I'm saying, but this group, I mean, these guys know how the markets work. I mean, Wilbur Ross been trading markets since long before you and I were here, right? I mean,
right. But how many? You know, look, Goldman Sachs was all over the Obama administration too. So,
oh yeah,
well, you know, it's they know.
I guess when I get to this point, I don't want, especially since my people have been doing so good in the last few months, I don't want the market to crash at all. I just know that when you put something up, like Goodhart said, the market should just be the market. Let it alone. It's not your grading system. It's not, you know, if it runs up, you did a good job as president that day. That's ignorant. I mean, and once you do that, all this stuff kind of follows. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you almost say it, like yesterday, we had a bad day in the market, and driving in this morning, before I even looked, because last night we were only up a little bit. I'm saying, okay, what's going to happen this morning? Who's going to come running out of the White House? You know, is it going to be this guy? Is it going to be Larry Kudlow? And say, you know, whose turn is it to run some salve on yesterday's sell-off? You know, and the simple fact is, let the market seek its own way. I think. You know, I mean, obviously, if there's a piece of bad news out there that drives the market down that shouldn't be there, I think you need to address it. I mean, I'm not that dumb. But how many times has this been that every time we have a down day, somebody comes running out of the White House to say something?
You know, and that's interesting because it really would lead to a greater question, and that is, you know, what should be the role there? You know, is there a administration role in keeping the markets calm, or should they step back and just let it happen?
Well, when
you're and I know, you know, I'm not talking about catastrophic events, because you know we saw that in 2008, and you know certainly there was a lot of intervention and a lot going on out of the White House. But is that even a role that should be there? And you're arguing no, and there might be obviously this administration that thinks the answer is yes.
Well, with the let's say the style is we're gonna blow up China essentially economically. We're gonna bring them to their heels without seeming regard to the intertwines between the two places and the companies. We're gonna threaten all these big tariffs, and then when the market says, well, if you do that, these companies are priced too high, and they start going down, as the market should, then you run out and say, I don't mean that, and run it back up. Well, if you didn't mean it, you shouldn't have said it in the first place. And I think when you say it in the first place, and then you go out and say that's not what you meant, these are very serious market-moving events that at the end of the day, you shouldn't have said either one of them, right? The first threat that you didn't mean, and then come out and say, don't worry, I didn't mean it. I mean, at the end of about, 2 years, you sit there and go, are we really doing this just so somebody can make money, or what are we doing?
Yeah, good question.
I mean,
you know, I think we should go back and say, what do we want and what do we expect? That wouldn't that be a nice topic in a debate?
Oh yeah.
You know, it's not that we would, you know, not that we would ask about anything so serious when there's stupid stuff to discuss.
Well, I mean, if you were a chairman of a corporation and you just opined one day, I really think that our company is for sale, and the sale price should be really 25% higher than where it's trading on the market. And all of a sudden, the stock runs up 15%, which it probably would, because obviously on that news, you're saying your place is in play, and you're hinting that you actually have some bidders. And then a week later, you go, hey, wait a minute, I was just talking after 12 beers. What are you talking about? I don't mean that at all. And it was running back down. Well, you can't do that as a person, Kevin. I mean, if you did that as a chairman of a company, you'd be in jail. And I'm saying, obviously, political events, you know, there's stuff that the president has to say about places, and it's a different world. I understand that. But after 25 times, we're not going to have a meeting. Oh, we are going to have a meeting. We're going to have a meeting. Oh, no, I walked out. I mean, after you really wonder, is it just the style or is there a pattern to this?
Well,
it's not once.
To a certain extent, it is the style. I mean,
yeah, I agree.
You know, it just is because that's the president's negotiating style.
But then you say, "Well, oh my God, did I do that? The market was down. You better run out there and fix it." Well, that's different.
Yeah, that is different.
Anywho, let's just hope that all this stuff happens okay. This weekend in Japan, and there actually is some kind of a meeting of the minds, because I have a feeling both countries are starting to wobble on this a little bit. I mean, some of the numbers here.
I don't think. You know, just because the presidents meet, I don't think that's going to be to reach an agreement. I think that's going to be to get the framework back in place.
Well,
maybe like Mnuchin said, maybe it's true. Maybe they have been negotiating all along, and they're pretty close to something both sides can live with. That's fine, but I don't expect Trump and Xi to be shaking hands and saying, "Here's the agreement, and we'll be have the signing ceremony any day."
If I was going to be, and I'm trying not to be this morning, because I'm really charged up about this College World Series coming. It's been a lot of fun to watch. Got a kid, the pitcher on Vanderbilt. Does he look like Bob Gibson or what? Big, huge guy. But he seems that size.
Don't know. Didn't watch it. Oh, so I can't comment on that.
They show his dad in the stands. He's a huge guy too. Anyway, but you can say here. I mean, You give classes, Kevin, and I know a little bit about English too, not as much, and I sure don't talk like I do. Now, here's the headline: Treasury Secretary Mnuchin says U.S.-China trade deal is 90% complete. I'm going to say, Kevin, for a year now, maybe more, in terms of volume, it's been 90% complete. It's the 10% which is the property rights and the admitting that they did all this wrong and not asking for plans anymore and all that stuff. I'm going to say that 10% is they're as far away as they ever have been. But yet, and technically correct, it's 90% complete. Yet it's still light years away from being happening.
Yeah, could be. It's all, you know, it is always the last 10% that takes 90% of the time.
Yeah. So, I mean, this guy is no dummy. He's out there and he's technically probably not lying. But as a young, you know, not young anymore, as a Catholic lad, as I believe that the Ten Commandments, it does not say thou shalt not lie. I think it says thou shalt not bear false witness, correct?
Yeah, I think there's another one that says thou shalt not be full of crap.
Yeah. I mean, and I think we found in our, in your lifetime, what is your greatest example of lying without lying? In other words, bearing false witness. And because I've come to believe at my age, Kevin, that telling half the story can be a worse lie than lying.
Oh, that's a good one, Tom. I might do that in class today. What do you have in mind for that?
I would say it's got to be on YouTube somewhere. Play Sammy Sosa's statement in front of Congress.
Oh, yeah.
That was special. Very special. For those that don't remember, I believe it was word for word, Kevin, help me if I'm wrong, I have never broken the laws of the United States or the Dominican Republic, and I have never injected myself with any steroids.
Which means that the laws are different in the Dominican Republic.
No, Dominican Republic he named. Dominican Republic in the United States. So he could have popped 500 pills in Mexico. But he said, basically told he's afraid of needles, so he didn't do that. And that he didn't take any in the U.S. or in Dominican Republic. Or he didn't buy any here. I don't know if it's against the law to take him here if you bring him in from some other place. I mean, when you start talking about that, how many fat people can dance on the head of a pin? I mean,
well, also remember, there are a certain number of steroids that are legal in the United States. Certain number of performance-enhancing drugs that are legal.
I thought that
banned by Major League Baseball.
I was under the impression that if you all kinds of steroids are banned, and that even stuff that you use for like a skin rash or something, if a baseball player were to take that, they show up like red lights in the pee test.
There are things that are legal that will show up on the test, and you may be right about the steroids, or it may be that you need a prescription for the steroids, so he went and got a prescription from somebody.
All right, because if you get something like that out of a health food store or whatever,
there are supplements. That's what I said. There are supplements that are against the rules of the sport, but not against the rules of the. But they're legal to sell. Let's put it that way.
Oh yeah, I agree. But anyway, we got a big down in the market. And we're bouncing back today, so that's good news. Which has caused the dollar to re-rally, which means gold has gone down. This has huge repercussions. And virtually these words have massive changes. And that's why I think when you ask why the market is, let me start the story somewhat from the beginning without being too windy in it. When you look at pricing models both for stocks and for options, especially in options, your assumptions are, okay, that, there's a steady stream of information affecting the markets and companies. Now, we all know that there isn't really a steady stream of information, especially affecting companies. I mean, I think anybody who's listening to the show for 30 seconds would be able to tell you that clearly the 5 minutes before an earnings announcement, you've got a much greater chance of your options are going to be priced higher. You've got a much greater chance of movement when earnings announcement comes out. Or when the Fed comes out, or maybe even a labor thing, although that's not really all that tradable, even though people think it is. Or could be, you know, an election day. It could be anything. But it's not a steady stream. You don't have an election every day. But when you see what's happened in the markets really in the last, I'm going to say 2.5 years, the person's style in the Oval Office is that virtually every day, when you talk about lack of liquidity at any given second, every given day, the market is now set up for some kind of an announcement, like virtually every minute of the day. Kevin, I've never seen that in 35 years. I mean, if you ran in there at 10 in the morning in order to buy 25 big spoos, I'm going to say somebody's going to say, what does he know? Because we do this, I won't say every day, but how many times a week? There's a shot across the bow that you would never have expected 20 years ago or 10 years ago.
I don't think there's anything that you would have expected from a communications standpoint from this administration, because the president is nonstop tweet, and it's tweet. You know, he gets around all media to do it. So what's going to be really interesting is to see how the next president handles that. Are we going to go back to the more conventional communications approach, or is this a change forever? Maybe not, you know, maybe not to the same volume, but to the same approach. What do you think?
I was going to say, what do you think would happen if, say, for instance, the two-headed monster, Chief and Kevin, were dual presidents, and the first day we both walk out to the podium
Good Lord, twice as bad as it could have been, huh?
Oh, yeah, twice as bad. And so we shove the whoever is Sarah Huckabee is at the time, we shove her off to the side, and when the first day we go, you know, we had an awful lot of work to do, and we're splitting this up, and Kevin's going to take these cabinet guys, and I'm going to take these, and we're going to go through Department of Labor, Department of Veterans Affairs, and we're going to we're going to do our best in the first year or two to set a lot of these places back on the schedule that we like them to be. We want to get the budget under control. We want to have some new programs. We want to find people over there that have some ideas that somehow aren't percolating to the top because we think there are people there to do. And we're going to spend like a real lot of time. And by the way, you're welcome to come here every morning. There's going to be somebody, but I'm not going to be your entertainment, and neither is Kevin. See ya. That would go over like a fart in church. What would CNBC and Fox do, or not CNBC, MSNBC and Fox do all day?
Well, yeah.
I'm sure they'd find something. But what if Harry Truman was president? It'd be the most boring.
You're saying you could run on the platform of putting the cable news out of business. I'd vote for that.
Well, I mean, but do you think it's become? What did Karl Marx, which was, you know, I guess he was a smart man. He made one. Well, as time has gone by, Kevin, I think he made one grievous error when he said religion is the opiate of the people. I don't know if you remember that or not. Well, for a while, I think it's became sports. As long as there's football, we don't care. Obviously, the Romans knew that because when Nero, was it Nero or one of the very unpopular emperors came into power, he had, in order to get the people on his side, he had gladiator events 60 days in a row or something, or instead of just on weekends, and at the end of 60 days, they all loved him because you go to, it's like having the NFL a game every day type of thing. Anyway.
Yeah, red and circuses.
But now I think it's politics. I mean, you and I have real jobs, and we do this because it affects what I do. I mean, and to be quite honest, after listening to it for 10 hours every day, I get tired of it. But I would say that it has become the soap opera of today's world. That there are an awful lot of people. There's 92 million people that are at home now, and that number used to be 70 million. And I think a lot of them watch this crap all day long. I mean, I was out to Audrey's cousin and his sister, the guy she married. He's one of these real right wing. You know, he's not a crazy guy or anything, but he's exceptionally conservative and spends his day watching Fox. What would he do all day? You have to learn how to play golf or something. I'm sure there's people like that on the other side. But listen to the other clowns.
Oh, I know some.
Yeah. So I mean, what would they have to do? Would they have to start doing charity work or what? Might be for the good, wouldn't it?
It could be for the greater good.
Yeah,
in so many ways.
Well, I mean,
isn't this? You know, this is something parents have been trying to get their kids to do is all along, and now we just have people our age that have the same problem they had when they were kids. Turn off the TV and go outside and play.
Yeah, I mean the idea that you know, and it's so. To me, it's interesting. I was talking this morning, or not talking. I was thinking about riding in as we were stuck in traffic. is the amount of people now that are concerned about what was the motivation behind the Mueller investigation? And you know what, Kevin? I'd be shocked if there wasn't somebody somewhere that had a political. What was the motivation behind Blagojevich? What was the motivation behind Otto Kerner? Do you think it was to give Jim Thompson an amazing thing in the paper for 2 years? You think for a second that a lot of these cases aren't for politics? I mean, come on. It's not whether it is or it isn't. How could somebody think that it ever isn't? I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I mean, I think it's probably wrong if it gets over the top. But the fact that somebody might be motivated, you think?
But that's not the... the questions that people have about the
thought, buddy. S&P futures up 11.75. We were up 14, but we're still up pretty solid. It's 0.4%. Dow up 105. Nasdaq up 48. Roughly half, 40% of what we were down yesterday. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right
now, right here, right now. Hello, everybody. Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Kevin O'Neill, Mr. Matt Weber, and Jack Silverman on the board. Luckbox Magazine, the guide to money and power probability, is available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue. Stocks and Jocks listeners receive a free digital subscription at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Anybody who's listening to the show on Tuesday mornings and listens to Jeff Joseph, co-host, knows that there's a pretty smart guy that's being involved getting some of these articles, and they're pretty fascinating stuff. I mean, I've learned a lot just the couple I've gone through and by listening to Jeff. So
they cover a lot of topics.
Yeah, they
too.
Really do. And it's, well, he's a trader, and traders know that everything depends on everything else. There's no such thing as a topic that doesn't connect with anything. They all
it's
do.
It's true. If I've learned anything from working with traders and meeting traders due to this show, it's that they're maybe some of the most well-rounded people as far as news and politics and sports and business and economics. They tend to have the ability to talk about everything, and not every field is like that.
Because it affects everything you do by the minute. There were some days. I mean, that's what I've been complaining about today. It's more days than I think should be happening now. You know, and it's not like they should be none. Anyway, we have the S&P futures up 12 and a quarter, NASDAQ futures up 51, Dow futures up 100. So, like I said, we're down 30 in the spools yesterday, so we're back 12. So we're 40% of the way back. I don't know what that means. Fibonacci would be 60 or 66. So we're not a fib spot yet if you're a fib guy. DAX up 41.3%. FTSE up 4. Call that flat. CAC around up 2. Call that flat. So 2 or 3 of the ones in Europe aren't doing anything. Nikkei down 107. They're catching up a little for yesterday. And Shanghai down 5. That's only 0.2%. Hang Seng actually up 36. That's 0.1. So not much. Oil, big rally up $1.08. 58.91 is the highest we've seen in a while. It's almost 2%. Brent up 87 cents. 65.92. That spread is now exactly 7 hours, which is 3.5 hours less than it was, you know, 3-4 weeks ago. Natural gas, 226, still cannot go anywhere. RBOB, however, back up to 193. So you're going to talk about variance. Gas, Maddie, 3 weeks ago was 305, then 265, then 289. I'll bet we're 295 this week. So it's flying around.
I don't know where you're getting your gas. It's 350 around here.
Homer Glen. South side.
Yeah.
Gold down 1070.
Way
1408. South side. Yeah, it's way south side. Silver down 4 cents, still over 15.25. Copper 273. So not much going on there. In the bond area, 10-year yield 2.02. So I won't say comfortably above 2, but it's at least, well, it's not under 1 anymore. Under 2 in the 1s. So we're sneaking up just a little bit because Powell came out yesterday and said that they're leaning towards maybe a rate cut, but still not yet, kind of defying the president's stubborn child stuff. Now, does that make Trump Powell's father, Manny?
Must
be, if he's the stubborn child. That's interesting. I'm not so sure I'd want to be Powell if that was the case. Trump was my father? I don't know. Anyway, what do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports?
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a pretty good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. No issues coming in on the Edens. We had a bit of a backup on the Kennedy, but that's mostly clear now. No issues on the Eisenhower. Stevenson has traffic building, but no crashes or stalls to report. Southside expressways are looking good, too. In the city, it looks like there's a crash on the south side, Cermak at Archer Avenue. That's causing a bit of congestion. And then we have two crashes out in the northwestern suburbs. One is in Wayne, Army Trail Road at Dunham Road. There's a crash with injuries that has emergency crews on the scene. And then just north of there in Elgin at McLean Boulevard and Lawrence, there is an accident. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, another hot and humid day. Much cooler by the lakefront, but still hot and humid. We'll reach a high of 80 here downtown. I could have some scattered showers as well and maybe an isolated thunderstorm or two, but in the mid-80s further inland. Right now it's partly cloudy and 71 degrees going up to a high of 80. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 104. Right now it's clear and 76. In sports, Cubs had a 2-1 lead in the 7th, but gave it up and fell to the Braves 3-2 last night. That series is tied at one game apiece. White Sox have now dropped 4 straight in the first 2 in their series in Boston. They lost last night 6-3. They will wrap up that series with a matinee today at noon Central Time as the Red Sox will go for the sweep. Tim Anderson will likely not play today. He sprained his ankle and his x-rays were negative, but he's listed as day-to-day. Diamondbacks lost to the Dodgers 3-2. And college baseball World Series is now going to a deciding game 3 tonight as Vanderbilt beat Michigan 4-1. So that series is tied at one game apiece. It'll be a 6 p.m. Central Time first pitch. I'm sure our guy Joel Elkonen will be tuning in.
Jeez. So will I. I've kind of gotten warm to this series a little bit. I mean,
yeah, you've been watching Michigan throughout, not just in the final here, but kind of throughout the whole tournament.
Every time I turned them on the last few weeks of the World Series, they were when I saw them, I kind of we'd switch back and forth between them and the Cubs and the Sox. Last night, I mean, you're not going to when somebody says quite frankly and then he tells a lie, I'm going to say I'm not going to opine anything here, but I guess I'm going to just by telling the story. Did you watch the Sox game last night? The Sox and Sox?
I watched the Cubs. I don't know if Kevin saw it.
Kevin?
I watched the Cubs.
Well, it was... it's been a long time I've been watching baseball. I'm going to say it rained as much in that game without a stoppage of play as I've ever seen.
It seemed to be, yeah, I flipped back like twice, and it was raining steadily both times.
A couple times it was absolutely pouring. And I never saw the guys go out and spread the 100 bags of stuff. There was none of that light-colored stuff anywhere on the mound or the infield. And that's how the guy hurt his ankle. He came running in for a ground ball and slipped in the mud.
So he hurt it on defense.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it just was a routine play.
Yeah, I did see the highlight of that this morning because rather than watch cable news, I usually put quick pitch on MLB and put that on when I wake up and I'm making my coffee.
Yeah,
that's a pretty good show, by the way. I like that show.
He slipped his right foot slipped out when he was thrown on a routine ground ball because the infield was mud.
Yikes!
And there was another play where the guy in Boston made an error. I don't know if they gave him an error, but it was a two hopper, and all of a sudden it didn't come up. Well, duh! It was mud. It went right in the left field.
I did hear Steve Stone mention last night that pitchers have a lot of trouble in the rain, and he said it's not just because of the grip, which is what you'd think of, but it's more about your landing spot.
Sure, sure.
You completely lose the sturdiness of your base, and your landing foot starts to slide or sink, and it's really difficult to pitch in the rain.
Well, but I mean, usually the guys are scurrying out there with the big bags of stuff. I didn't see any of that.
Well, it's just not like it didn't happen just because you didn't see it.
I'm saying you can always tell that it's always lighter color, right?
It must have been raining pretty hard.
Well,
I assume it was turning dark pretty quickly.
Well, unless they got some stuff that's the same color, but I'm saying it was pretty wet. All I'm saying, what can I tell you? With the,
I like how you think they don't have the Diamond Dry in Boston.
I'm sure they do. But when you use that, little known favorite college rule because, hey, saw a guy slide on that and absolutely destroyed his ankle one night. And so I'll remember to this day, it was brutal. When you put that stuff in there, like on a night game, tomorrow morning, all that stuff's got to come out. Because when it hardens, you can't play on it. It turns into like silly putty. The day the Cubs played that one day where they claimed they put like 100 bags down, the fine print the next day was they took out I don't know how many thousand pounds of infield and had to redo it the next morning.
What is that stuff made out of?
It must be something. It has to be something almost like a kitty litter type of thing. Only ground. It just absorbs incredible amounts of stuff. But then it turns into like clay. You can never leave it in an infield.
So a quick Google search here says Diamond Dry is an all natural, biodegradable and renewable product made from corn cobs with no chemicals, coloring or other additives. Diamond Dry does an exceptional job of absorbing water on baseball, softball fields. It's made out of corn cobs.
Okay.
I wouldn't have guessed that in a million years.
No, me neither. But it's what's kitty litter made out of?
Have you ever seen a corn cob that couldn't soak up water?
Yeah, Matty, you're from Iowa. You're supposed to notice.
That's a good point. They're very absorbent. It's like a sponge. What is kitty litter made of? Good question.
It's got to be. Anyway, so Kevin.
All kinds of stuff. Before we leave baseball, while I was watching the Cubs, I did a little bit of calculation. I know this number is out there somewhere. I just didn't feel like searching for it. It was just as easy to paste it into a spreadsheet and create a formula. But we were talking about Baez, Javier Baez, when last time I was on. And I wanted to take a look at this. Javier Baez, the biggest reason for him to not be such a free swinger, and his strikeout percentage is 30%, by the way. 30% of the time he goes to play, he strikes out. Highest on the Cubs, although there are a few others that are pretty high. Contreras is high. Schwarber's high. Schwarber's 28%. Contreras is 27%. And Addison Russell is 25%. And we'll get to Addison Russell in a minute. But when Javier Baez makes contact, his batting average is .417.
What's normal?
Wow.
Well, if you want to look at the others on the team, because I don't have the league average, although I'm sure that's available, Contreras is the only one higher. He's .422. The difference being that Baez only walks 6% of the time, and Contreras walks 11% of the time, which is right in line with most of his teammates. But Bryan is .368, Bodie's .357, Schwarber .343. Rizzo, believe it or not, is .335, which seems a little low. Now, everybody's going to be much higher than their batting average, of course. That makes sense. But Baez is 130 points higher than his batting average. So this is clearly a guy who needs to put the bat on the ball more often.
Yeah, well.
And so, you know, being more selective and not swinging from the heels as much, you know, as I look at him, he's the smartest player on the field for about 99.9% of the field. The only place he's not the smartest player on the field is when he steps in the batter's box.
I would agree.
Yeah, it's hard to argue.
Yeah. Now, the other end of the spectrum, and these are also some guys we discussed, the contact batter, you know, forget just the strikeouts. And Addison Russell has a low walk rate. He's about 8%. And Albert Almora is only 5%. So neither of these guys walk. Russell strikes out 25% of the time. Almora is actually pretty low by Cubs standards. He's only 16%. But their batting averages, Russell's batting average when he makes contact is .310, and Almora's batting average when he makes contact is .294. Those are by far the lowest on the team. And so when you talk about, you know, can a guy make a contribution, you know, neither one of them is particularly disciplined at the plate. And then they, on top of it, when they do make contact, it doesn't go anywhere.
Well, that's been my, I don't say it as well as you do most of the time, but that's been my bitch about the Cubs. And granted, they got, in the last 5 years, they've been the best team in baseball for 5 years. I mean, arguably very close. And, you know, and they're a likable team, and they come to play. They play hard. So it's, some of the people, the stuff they do, I mean, I and again, you and I, Kevin, played how many gazillion softball games, and they want me to play again tomorrow night. How bad is that? But, I mean, there are times when there were people on the other team that I was pitching against that were just unusual human beings in terms of strength and coordination, where you didn't care what the count was. You wanted that guy swinging for the hills because there's a pretty good chance he was going to put one over the hill, right? Yet me, I never had that. I had okay power, but not, I couldn't hit as far as you could. But so for me, I'd sit there and go, I need to put it kind of where they're not. I have a better chance. I can't just hit it over the left fielder's head 40% of the time, and no matter how far back he is, and just run. So it's not what they do. It's the people that do it. I mean, if you're Ted Williams and they put a shift on you, you're probably going to be too much pride. You're not going to care. I don't know if anybody in the Cubs is Ted Williams. And I just look at every individual player has a certain skill set and has to sort of adapt. Mine, I had enough power that if I got it in the gap, in the right gap, I could hit a home run. I could never, if they backed up on me, just say I'm going to put it over the guy's head. But I pitched against people that could put it over anybody's head, right? But they weren't me, you know. But I could place the ball better than them, and they could hit the ball harder than me. You know, but you got to find your spot. And I think some of these guys, I don't know if it's the salaries, it's not listening to the coaches, or whatever it is, people seem to me mismatched with the guys that don't hit the ball all that hard. You could put everybody on the right side of second base, and they wouldn't put one to the left side to save their life. And to me, it just doesn't match. I don't know, am I just being too critical or what?
Well, there's different stats that are driving the game now compared to then, so that's part of it. And those stats, you know, I'm not arguing that they're wrong. They're absolutely
right. They can't be wrong. They're stats. Man.
That's part of it. But there's other insights that you can get to this. So for example, Kyle Schwarber strikes out 28% of the time. He's tied for the highest walk rate on the team at 12%. So it's not that he's undisciplined. It's just that he swings and misses a lot, and he always has. That's always been the knock on him and his offensive game. Is, you know, when he doesn't hit the ball that often enough. I read 3 years ago somebody predicting he would not become a great hitter just because he swings and misses too much.
Well,
and sure enough, you know, just running some numbers, the stats bear that out a little bit.
Right. So my criticism of him would be give yourself two, and on the third one you got to shorten up and you got to touch it.
Right, but I don't know that he doesn't take a lot of big swings anyway.
Yeah, he's got a short, quick swing. He just is bad at making contact.
Well, but I'm saying if you If you choke up, if you...
And he doesn't swing at balls very often, and he gets squeezed by umpires. Like there's more bad called strikes against him than anyone. And so that affects him, too, because he's so patient. And I understand what you're saying, but it's not like he has, like, the big, long, you know, Baez swing.
No.
He's pretty short and quick and compact. He just sucks at... He just has bad hand-eye coordination or something compared to some of the other guys.
Whatever it is, you're right, Matt. It's a problem. You know, could he improve that by doing what Rizzo does and choking up a couple of inches when he gets two strikes? Don't know. Might be worth a try. But I don't know that's his problem. He just swings and misses.
If I don't see him hit a two-hopper to the guy placed in right field just because he hits it there, if he doesn't do that twice a game, I'm stunned.
Yeah, and I would agree with that, and we've talked about that. I think if you don't figure out how to beat the shift, I don't care if it's putting down a bunt to beat the shift or learning to go the other way better. Now they don't make it easy, because if they're going to shift, they're going to pitch you inside. They're not going to make it easy for you to take it the other way. But I don't care. Learn an inside out swing. Figure out what you have to do, because for my own personal playing ball, all I ever wanted to do was see an honest defense. So if you're going to move, I'll make you move back.
Well, obviously easier to do in softball, but some guys were master, bat handlers. They, of course, in those days, if you were the bat handler, I don't know if you've ever seen any of those bats. The handle was amazingly thicker, and the bat was essentially shaped different. I mean, now these guys went to super narrow. Everything is a home run bat.
There may be something to that. I don't know if you guys saw Madden's press conference on Monday after the win. That fifth inning where they scored five runs and really blew the game open, they had five straight hits, and every single one of them was to opposite field. And Madden, talked afterwards, and he said, it was a beautiful approach. I loved it. We preach that every single day. And I think one of the reporters asked, well, why can't they consistently do that? And I think his whole point was, it's really hard to do that.
Yeah, I agree.
And we preach it every day, and it's kind of weird. It's when you're going well, it's like everyone's doing it and it seems easy, and when you're not going well, no one can do it. But it's not like we're not preaching it every day. I think
right. So yeah, they are all over it, and I think sometimes the players get away from it. Because eventually you revert to the guy you've always been. That's why habits are hard to break.
Right, well, you're thinking, yeah. I got to this point and got this big salary and got to the big leagues because of who I am. Maybe I don't need to listen to anybody else.
Well,
I don't even know that they're consistently rejecting it, too. It's real easy when you get on a roll to almost become unconscious about it. But the problem is that when you do anything unconsciously, sooner or later that'll catch up to you.
Right. Well, a couple of pitching coaches, when Sarge was still a pitching coach, he just says that, you wait for people to come to you. Those guys have no more right to walk out in a batting cage and say, we're going to work on bunting the ball the other way today. If the guy just says, I'm not doing that, and walks away, I don't think you have any ability, unless the guy's just up from AAA, to tell these guys what to do. They come to you if they want help.
Well, in the end, if I were writing Javier Baez's next contract, I would fill it with a gigantic incentive for leading the league in doubles.
Yeah, well, you're sure fast enough.
I want you using the whole field, because the guy is such a great base runner that I want him on base.
Yeah, it was people, and Kevin, as they say, all these people got drafted from out of, pretty much everybody on Michigan or Vanderbilt's team. Baseball, you either sign out of high school, and if you don't sign, you go to college, you can't leave for 3 years, correct?
Correct.
So most of these guys...
You're not eligible to be drafted for 3 years.
Okay.
You don't have to go to college.
No, you just can't...
But you just can't go back... You can't get drafted again until 3 years later.
So...
I'm not sure if you don't go to college what the options are. What if you chose to go play in the Mexican League, that or in Asia? I don't know what would happen in that case.
Well, if you went to Venezuela, you wouldn't have to worry about it. You wouldn't come back.
That's true.
Which used to be what the best winter league around, wasn't it? Everybody went to Venezuela. The umpire the other night that was involved.
Damn communism, socialism. Yeah. See what happens? It ruins baseball.
Well, did you see the umpire the other night in the midst of the Contreras Flowers fiasco? Tom Payne, that's the guy that I know from the South Side. His uncle used to play ball with us basketball three nights a week in the wintertime. It was always their guys against our guys. They were the guys from Oak Lawn, and we were the guys from Evergreen Park. But anyway, he did a winter league in Venezuela. He said it was spectacular. He said, nobody argues. All I want to do is play. I hit him. I pitch him. You call him. Let's play. No instant replay. He said it was like heaven.
That's where Ozzy's from, right? Ozzy Guillen?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Joe writes in on Twitter, Schwarber's patience sometimes works against him. He gets to too many full counts, passes on better pitches earlier in the count, then gets rung up on borderline calls. That does happen a lot.
Yeah, it does happen.
Yeah. In my world, you start off with a strike zone that is a small square inside the legal strike zone. And you don't pass on that pitch.
You shouldn't.
That's the one you get. And then that expands and contracts based on, based on the count. And if you got two strikes on you, then it expands to encompass the entire legal strike zone. Now, again, that makes sense to me, but guys that go up and say, I'm just taking the first pitch, don't make sense to me.
Any kind of a rule like that, Kevin, when you become experienced at anything, is actually fairly ignorant when you think about it. It's like trading. They say, okay, never be afraid to take a profit. All right, fine. So you get a good one, and all of a sudden you're up 50 cents. Do you take it just because it's a profit? Okay? Because there's no law that says if you have a bad one, you can only lose 50 cents, right? So if you're going to only make 50 cents, you better find a way to never lose more than 50 cents, which is very hard to do. So it's like saying in baseball, the fact is virtually every baseball player, and really, since I pitched softball forever, most softball hitters, or some guys can hit anything, there's pitches they can hit and pitches they can't. I don't think there's probably been, at any given time in the game, what do we have, 15 players that can hit the entire repertoire a pitcher has? The trick is, if you're a guy for an inside fastball and that's your pitch that you can go to, if you're Ryan Sandberg, you don't let one of those go by, ever. Right? Because you're looking for one and
another. Yeah. And that would be my approach. So you don't hesitate to swing at the first pitch. You're just really, really picky about it. Doesn't mean you're never going to get fooled by something on the first pitch or whatever can happen. The pitchers are highly paid professionals as well. But the whole idea is that, at the Ted Williams philosophy, you have to get a good pitch to hit. It doesn't mean you're never going to go trotting down to first base with a walk or walking back to the dugout saying, I wish I had swung at that first pitch. But it just means you have to be real selective about it.
Well, what did Hawk Harrelson, he said his first time he was up and the guy says, hey, Hawk, look at this way. You're not Babe Ruth. You're never going to really hit a curveball very well. So for your job is never miss a fastball and try and get as many of them as you can and foul off the curves till the guy gets pissed off and throws you a fastball and then you can hit it. Right? It is the game.
What I find interesting is sometimes you can tell when a player completely makes up their mind before the pitch that they're gonna take, no matter what. And that's fine, I guess, in certain scenarios. If 3-0 count and you desperately need a base runner, you're taking all day, whatever. But Rizzo last night, I don't know if you guys saw the at-bat, he had a really good at-bat late in the game and was down 0-2, rallied back, fouled off a couple of pitches, got the count back to 2-2, and then just took a fastball right down the middle. I mean, just right down the middle. And I was like, did he just make up his mind that he wasn't going to swing at that pitch because he thought the guy was going to bury another one in the dirt?
He was absolutely convinced. I will go out on a limb here and say he think the guy was junking him, and he was going to junk him one more time, and he was stunned. He threw the fastball down the middle.
Yeah.
He just couldn't pull the trigger.
Yeah, it was like center cut right down the middle. It's like, oh, my gosh.
And he's like, the last thing this guy's going to do, he may do it on 3-2, but he's never going to do it on 2-2.
Yeah.
That's right. On 3-2, he wouldn't have missed it. I'm going to guess on 3-2, he wouldn't have missed it.
The pitcher just outguessed him, I guess. I mean,
Kevin, thank you very much, buddy. SP Futures up 12 and a quarter. Talk to you on Friday. NASDAQ futures up 51 now. Come back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at ptisecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@ptisecurities.com. That's john@ptisecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now.
There's something happening.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Matt Weber on the board, Mr. Jack Silverman. We also have Mr. Russell Rhodes with us. S&P Futures up 12 and a quarter, but can kind of around this number since I came in, and the NASDAQ Futures up 50. How are you, Russell?
I'm doing okay. How's it going in Chicago?
All right. You should see this huge report here I have on you.
Uh-oh.
The other night I ran into a guy named, he calls himself the Hackmeister.
Uh-oh.
And he can hack anybody's computer. He used to work for NSA, then he worked for Matty Weber's firm, and everywhere. Mm-hmm. So I said, keep your eye on this guy, Russell.
Uh-huh.
So here this morning I get this thing. Let's see, 6 a.m., five new cardigans, 400 apiece. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if I like any of these colors.
Well, they're off price this time of year.
That's right. And then, but it gets better. He says, let's see, burn phone from Mnuchin, 3 o'clock.
Ooh. Hey, my wife listened.
Yeah, burn phone.
What do you need that burn phone for?
Burn phone from Mnuchin, order placed on Hong Kong chain, 20 big spoos. He's up 30 points. He can afford the cardigans, looks like to me.
Yeah, the trade was before the cardigans.
Yeah, oh yeah, we got to get money for them.
We got to get some music from the band, the Cardigans, on Wednesdays when I'm here.
So, how many people do you think? Whatever, I know I'm walking out on a limb here, but this stuff is very tradable, Russell. These we're not going to have a meeting. We're going to have a meeting. God bless. I'm glad we're back up because yesterday looked pretty bad in the close. So I'm glad we're bouncing, but still, I don't know. I mean, this seems to be not something you can do for like 30 years. Any way to handle a market?
Well, I don't think it'll be happening for 30 years. I doubt it's going to be happening more than a couple more.
Well, so. I don't know. I don't know who's going to win, but me predicting politics, though, is not so good, so I'm better off sticking to the market.
There's no way on earth this time before the last election we would have been able to figure out what was going to happen. Actually, I think we all knew what was going to happen. We thought we knew what was going to happen. We thought we would have our first female president. I don't think many people, because, you know, that wasn't the side that I was on, but I kind of was resolved that was what was going to happen.
I always doubted that, really.
I knew
there was an incredible backlog of people, myself included. Even though I've been a lifelong Democrat until recently, I would never vote for her. I would never vote. The depth of just disdain for the woman in the general population was much higher than anybody thought. And like,
maybe I just didn't see it because I'm not on that side of things, you know? I mean, I had that disdain. I had it going all the way back to growing. I'm actually down in Memphis today, right across the river from Bill Clinton's home state, and it's kind of like we all knew how shifty he was down here, but, it didn't seem to matter nationally, and I guess maybe it was the same thing with her as far as just not being the most pleasant person in the world. I always thought of them as like the neighbor couple that you loved when they came over because you loved him, but you kind of let her come along.
Well, the man has...
They were a package.
I mean, as much as you're not supposed to ever say anything sexual, whatever, the fact is women love the guy. Always have.
And they do. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I know it. You know, and no, it's not just women. It's, I went to college with guys that were from Arkansas that would be around him back when he was governor, and they said, you know, he'd walk in a room and he would command the room and he would make every person in the room that he came near feel special one way or another. And it wasn't just women. I think he used that ability to get elected in for some other, I can't even think of the word, but I think you guys know where I'm going. more nefarious reasons. He could just, you know, he is the perfect politician.
He was able to take money from somebody, and what are your thoughts and concerns and go to totally the opposite. Nobody was ever mad at him. but there are people like that. You know, it was amazingly like that was Harold Washington. They said, you know, people would go away.
Chicago days.
He was always late. So people would be sitting there, and they're all pissed off that he's late. His time is more important than theirs, and he'd walk in, he'd big, huge smile, he'd give everybody a handshake, and look you right in the eye, and 5 minutes later, nobody cared he was late. And people have that. I'm not saying it's bad. That's good. He had that carry the room, I light the place up naturally because he liked people. It wasn't like he was a scam artist. I mean, they said everybody knew him, liked him. You know, and that goes a long way, I think. oh, Harold's busy. That's why he was late. Blah blah blah. What's the big deal? You know, I'll say that for until she managed to mess herself up with the boyfriend was Carol Moseley Brown.
Yeah,
exceptionally attractive.
Yeah, I do remember that. And then I like that. Messed herself up with the boyfriend. Where did she end up being an ambassador to?
I'm not sure, but he
was it South? Was it South Africa?
Might have been, but okay. She came.
I mean, she kind of, you know, she had a little bit of a cloud over her, and they gave her a good place to go where the cloud could, you know, probably didn't follow. That's what I kind of remember.
Well, your right wing buddies at the SIBO always had an issue with her, and it was an interesting issue. Is that the fact that, I won't say because she was black, because I don't think that was the truth. But she was the Democratic senator, and of course, real guys with money, you know, of course, are always Republicans, you know, or at least they say they are. The problem is that she did everything they ever asked her for. And the interesting part was, we went to one of these big things, and she and I were talking, and it turns out, her chief of staff went on Weather McCauley, grew up in Evergreen Park, so of course we hit it off, right? Well, it turns out all the guys, this is in the 90s, the guys who were sending like their classes from, you know, whatever, were for a place like where you live out to Washington, and they were looking for a special tour. They knew that I the lady who was her chief of command or chief of staff or whatever, I mean, I only met her one time, but I would call her up and say, hey, you know, Russell Rhodes' kid's class coming out there. Oh, Carol will be happy to meet him and take him around. But a Republican, whoever the other guy was, wouldn't do anything for anybody. So here's all these guys going, well, we don't know if we're going to endorse her or send her any money, but hey, how about you give her a buzz and see if she can get my kid's class through the Senate? Because you know what? And she never said no to anybody. I mean, she was pleasant to everybody. So I don't know how good of a senator she was, but how can you tell how good any of them are, really? I mean,
I think one of the reasons it's been a rarity that we've had somebody go from being senator to president. I mean, the last couple were JFK and then Barack Obama, is because it's real easy to pick apart what they've done and point out the negative. And Obama wasn't senator long enough, I guess, to have a record that you could pick on like that, but. You know, Joe Biden, he's got a pretty long record that people are going to be able to go after.
Well, it
probably didn't help John McCain either.
No, but so, people have
like you said, it's I don't really know what does define a good senator and a bad senator other than bringing things back to your home state.
Well, I think that's a good rep.
Yeah.
But in fact, I asked a former Mailer Daily one day at the club. I said, Mayor, in your mind, of a freshman 2-year Congress guy or lady, how do you define a good first term? He goes, at least a $50,000 project back to your district.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, on the one hand, you can't, and this is the yin and the yang, we were talking about that with Kevin earlier in the show, you can't just bring cash back to your place, but you also can't bring none when other people are getting it all. Because your people pay taxes too.
Yeah.
I mean, I mentioned this before, I went on one of these barge trips that the Illinois Corn Growers Association do, and well, it's fascinating. You can imagine me going on a barge trip with we got the guy, the push boat, or whatever. They call them tow boats, but they push, they don't pull. And,
yeah.
I get into the captain's area, you know, where the guy's driving it. I almost let it slip and said, get these other people out of here. I want to try this thing for at least 100 yards. I was so anxious to get behind the throttle and the wheel. It was like being in a jet aircraft and wanting to, can I fly this thing for 50 feet? It was like, anyway, but they talked about, who was the guy that just, croaked from, West Virginia? It was there for a bazillion years. Was it Bird?
Yeah.
Well,
he changed parties too.
Yeah, other than the Alton Lock and Dam, which is, I guess, what, Illinois, Iowa, or is it Illinois, Missouri? I don't know. I think it's Illinois, Iowa. That is within the last 50 years. every other lack and dam in the Illinois River and the Mississippi River is Depression era. And yet these poor these poor bastards that are the towboat operators, every time they buy diesel, they pay whatever, 10, 15, 20% tax for waterway maintenance. No, and where the hell's that money gone for 80 years now? And yet, Senator Byrd from West Virginia, every lock and dam on the Ohio River is within the last 30 years. I mean, I'm not positive of that, but he got his done and our guys didn't. You know, and it's, they claim if we were to do, there's like six of them, if we were to redo all of them in the next 10 years, 15 years, it's like, it was like 2 or 3 million hours work for carpenters, and it's unbelievable, Russell. And for you to not bring that back, and I wonder why, you know, you think Illinois could use that work? I think we probably could. Not to mention, we could use the, I think the, for, you know, I talk once in a while, and Russell knows more about this than me, but we talk about basis risk and where your corn is. Mm-hmm. And if we got a bushel of corn sitting here in PTI office, it's probably not worth, you know, 365 or whatever we're trading, right? Because somehow we got to get it to where the guy's going to pay us the 365. Well, every spot you put in a river, every lock and dam you go through, because it takes them so long to do it, I think you shave 2 cents off the value of your corn.
Mm-hmm.
So if you put your corn in below Alton, you know, get a truck and haul it down there, which costs you money, I think you can shave 12 cents a bushel off your price, or 15 or 18 or 10, or, but it's a real number. And, you know, so, I mean, if all of a sudden you could put 12 barges through the Lock and Dam instead of 6, everybody gets through twice as fast, would it make a difference? Yeah.
It would, yeah. It would definitely make a difference. Yeah. In fact, the barge traffic's actually been closed.
Well, yeah, the rivers are so
high down here. And
is it still closed, or is it?
No, they reopened it today.
Well, they got to be backed up. Good thing we're not.
My wife and I were downtown in Memphis a couple of days ago, and she said, "This is the first time I haven't seen a barge when we've been here." And like, yeah, I said, I would assume, and I know this from history, that the river is so high right now, it's difficult for them to navigate, so they actually shut down barge traffic. And then I checked it, and I was actually correct that was what was going on. But my understanding is, I've been looking at the price of corn versus that, and seeing what would happen when they reopen it. They reopened it about 12 hours ago.
Well, you went down to the river, how high up the embankments is it?
Well, the way it works in Memphis, it's really interesting. Memphis is up on a bluff, and when the river gets really high, it goes over to the Arkansas side.
Okay.
It really floods in that direction. And I was showing my wife and kids where the tree line is, and it's the river right now is about twice as far as where the normal tree line is, and it's flooding into to where they actually farm rice, because that works particularly well in areas that get flooded periodically into Arkansas. So the way you see it here is not height. It's actually how far is it going into Arkansas. And I've seen it worse, but it's pretty bad.
So it's over the dikes on the Arkansas side. It's actually flooding.
No, they don't even try to control it.
Oh, okay.
It's just, it really is, they worry about it just on this side of on the Tennessee side. And when the river's not very high and you look at the bridge, you're like, why the hell is the bridge that long? And why is it elevated an extra half a mile? And the reason it's elevated like that is because it's elevated and created, based on how high the water will get. Not how high the water is right now.
Well, the
river, the river stage here isn't necessarily height; it's more how wide it gets, which is not what you think of when you think of flooding. But it just goes over to the Arkansas side.
Well, I know if you go to Cincinnati, the dikes on both sides of the Ohio River, you look at it and you go, they can't be serious. The river could never have gotten that high. I mean, it's got to be.
Oh, yeah.
It's got to be 100 and some feet over over where the saloons are in the barges. I mean, it's way up where, you know, where they're high water. I don't know if it's high water mark, but where they're protecting too. It's way up there.
You've got the same thing in Tulsa. I see that when I was going to school at Oklahoma State. Same thing. So,
well, funny you should mention that about the.
This is exactly what you knew we were going to talk about this morning.
Well, but you know, it's sort of fascinating because we're starting to talk about infrastructure, and when you see things like that,
yeah.
Well, one of the things, real quick, before we get into economics, when they built the Transcontinental Railroad, one of the peskiest bridges they built was over. It wasn't like the Platte River. It was some place along the way in Wyoming or somewhere, and they did this huge bridge. Way up there for like a mile, you know, with trestles and all that stuff, because they had wood trestles in those days. And they said, if you looked at them, in a book it said, if you looked at them building it, you'd say, basically, what the bleep are they doing? Because on a normal day, you could essentially hop over the river. But when they had enough history that when there was a storm, it would just get like a half a mile wide, like instantly, it just come running down there. And you had to prepare for that. And you look at it, you go, what are you even building that bridge for? We could just put a tube there, let it run through. No, I mean, so you really do have to plan for all that. I mean, it's fascinating. I really wish I would have taken a couple of civil engineering courses. I'd be worse than I am now. I'd be critiquing every bridge, but
so, you know it all.
Yeah, well, I don't know about knowing it all, but I know enough to be dangerous.
You know what I mean?
It's like economics. You know enough to be dangerous. So what do you irons in the fire, Russell? We've got. You know, huge sanctions going against. What do you think if you were to put your class and say, "I want you guys to do a whole bunch of research for me." Here's 30 instances where countries have used sanctions against people. Give me a grade on all 30 of them. Of did they really work? Did they have intended consequences? Did they make the people there like you, hate you? I mean, what do they do for you? What do you think that would show?
I think it would show that. Sanctions just make them mad. And if you've got opposition in the country to the, let's just say with Iran, I'll use Iran as an example instead of sounding overly academic. I'll bet you there are people in Iran that are big fans of the United States. They don't say it out loud. I'll bet they are, and they're unhappy with, the direction that country has gone. And, when we do something like this that impacts their day-to-day life, it makes them like us a little bit less. And, you know, it's kind of like something you've said before. You've said, well, the enemy of my enemy makes the enemy my friend, or something along those lines.
I didn't say it. I wasn't the first. I quoted it.
I know, but you like to use that phrase. And
the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Unfortunately,
yeah.
I think that's what ends up happening in Iran is, you know, we hope that the that this might cause some internal strife, and that would maybe change some things with how Iran is behaving right now. Like the people will say, "Well, government, stop acting like that," so the United States doesn't do things that makes our lives a little bit worse. I think an example going back a decade or two is Venezuela, and where are they right now? I don't think they're that we're their big champion right now because of the way that country's turned out. I'm not saying that what we did caused everything that's bad in Venezuela, but it sure gives the leadership a finger to point.
Well, does it?
Not us. It's the United States that did this to us.
If you can believe,
if Iran starts to degenerate, it's going to be our fault.
To the extent that you can,
and I don't think it wins any love.
I would agree with you, as a matter of fact, totally on general principles, because I know somebody from Serbia who said the people there felt the exact same way. They thought the U.S. was their friend, and all of a sudden they can't get any food or medical supplies. But although I don't know that we necessarily would put an embargo on medical supplies, but you know, one thing, if the administration is able to do this, it's kind of a new phenomenon. Well, I guess it's not always new, but all these these dictatorships around the world. I'm going to say Hitler had money offshore, but that's he was like one of the richest men in Germany, wasn't he? With his book, and everybody in the world.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, 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 yeah.
But I mean,
I've seen a documentary on his well.
Well, to see the
pretty extensive
the extent that we can spot the money that the Ayatollah and his buddies have stolen from their own people and have offshore and put a noose around that. I'm not so sure that. I'm not saying, Mr. President, I'll shake your hand on that one. I mean, if we can isolate that, I don't know. Am I being two-faced by saying to me that's okay as long as you don't screw the people over there that actually we think are liking us? I wonder.
It's a good way to go about it.
Yeah,
it's a better way. I remember the Obama administration, the previous administration. Russia did something, so what they did was they were going to freeze the assets of, like, the top 12 oligarchs in Russia or government officials in Russia or something like that. Because I remember one of the guys said, go right ahead, I don't have anything offshore. But that's a better way to go about it than crippling the overall economy.
I have a question regarding, I mean, obviously the Joe Biden situation, but I've heard from Trump now and a couple other people right out of the gate, and all his, I'll use the term flunkies, run around the talk shows and talk about him. They keep pounding on the original deal and how we gave all this money cash to the Iranian government, essentially, and the Obama administration. Somewhere along the line, Russell, in my theme this morning that telling half the story is more of a lie than telling a lie sometimes. Do you think anybody is going to tell the whole story like we tell on this show? That the reason why you had to give them cash is because we don't let them in, the international payments community, so we literally could not have sent them a check because they can't cash it.
All right, and beyond that, I don't think we gave them cash. I think we gave them their cash.
Well,
we
you know, you're,
to forever.
You're the only,
if I,
you're the only person, you must be because you listen to the show. How many people, if you walk in a, you're more of a coffee shop guy than a bar guy, how many people, if you walked in and said, the money we gave it to Iran, whose was it? How many people in the room say ours?
No, I wouldn't. We were giving them their money back.
All right, what I'm asking you is, other than you and me and listeners to this show, because
I'm not saying we should have.
I don't know, I'm just saying, because Fowry comes on the show.
You know, it's like saying that we paid, you know, that they got paid off, what was it, $4 billion or something like that. And then the other thing is, I find the visualization where they say they did it, you know, in the cover of night, where they just loaded it onto some, you know, transport planes and dropped it off in Iran. Well, I mean, what did they want? Did they want us to, you know, for all the TV cameras in the world, say, hey, this plane's got $4 billion. Check out the pallets of money we're putting on there right now. Hey, you really want to fly something like that a third of the way around the world and let people know what's going on? I feel like that's one of those things you probably just
want to
keep secret.
Russell, in my opinion, you're making a big, big faux pas here. You're assuming because you know something other people do. I'm going to say if you walk into a trivia contest in a Trump bar and you add to the question, the money that went to Iran's, was it their money or ours? You're not going to get one person there that says it was theirs.
It was theirs.
I know that.
Held on to since 79.
Like I said, how many people in the bar are going to vote that way? I didn't say there'd be one vote right, yours. And I'll bet you in the talk shows this week, if they start talking about Joe Biden, Kellyanne Conway, and the rest of the group, they will say that it was our money we gave them. They will not say it was theirs.
We're going to watch for the word parsing.
Yeah, well, I mean,
if they just say, what they'll say is they will say we sent for, and I do think it was, for some reason, the number $4 billion sticks in my mind. So, well, we sent, for, you know,
it
in the dead
much.
Of night, the Obama administration, with the approval of Joe Biden, sent $4 billion to Iran and a.
Hold that thought, Russell.
Gave them cash.
I don't think it was $4 billion, but it was.
The way that I just said that is, I never said that we sent them our money. We just said we sent them the cash,
right?
And automatically, and you can be in it. Being disingenuous, but it's not being dishonest.
It's
not being entirely untruth.
All right, when we come back from break,
that money.
We come back from break. We'll discuss how many fat people can jump on the head of a pin. SP futures up 11. NASDAQ futures up 49. I have my number. Fat people, get yours, Russell. We'll be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Russell Rhodes. Mr. Matt Weber and Mr. Jack Silverman on the board. SP Futures up 950 now. Leaking a little bit. I actually thought we'd go higher, to be honest with you. It shows you how much I know from minute to minute on the market. We were up 14 when we came in, or maybe 16 when we were driving in, and we're leaking just a little. NASDAQ's only up
40. It was up 55. Dow up 96 was up like a buck 50, but still, you know, a bounce back from yesterday. So it's, as of now, still pretty positive. DAX up 58. It was up 70 something a minute ago. FTSE up 9. It's actually up more. It was flat. We did it an hour ago. It's up 0.1%. CAC ran up 8.76, 0.1%, so very quiet over there. Asia, the Nikkei down 107.5%, Shanghai down 5.2%, Hang Seng up 36, call that one flat. Big move in oil to the upside, although not as much as earlier. We were over 59 before, now we're up 1.12, 58.95, and we've got 65.91 on Brent, so that spread is actually less than $7 right now. RBOB gas 193, natural gas going nowhere. Gold not only down $5, it was down 15 earlier, so it's rallied back. Silver was down as well, now it's unchanged. So the obviously gold wants to go up when the Fed is talking about rate cuts, and the Fed yesterday, Chairman Powell basically said they're looking at a rate cut, but you know, nothing like, didn't seem to hit like a half a percent next month, which is what a lot of people are hoping for. Maddie, we got first Trevi Weather Sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. This sports weather traffic update is brought to you by Luckbox Magazine. The guide to money and probability is available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue. Stocks and Jocks listeners receive a free digital subscription at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Go ahead and register for free today. Absolutely no strings attached for Stocks and Jocks listeners. It's just a free subscription to an awesome magazine. We're off to a decent start on the area expressways, but there's a big crash on Lakeshore Drive, and that is Lakeshore Drive pretty jammed up on the north side. Just before Fullerton, on the northbound side of Lakeshore is that crash, and that has Monroe to Hollywood up to 30 minutes now in building. So solid traffic, and it's affecting the southbound Lakeshore Drive as well, with gapers. So Lakeshore Drive not looking great around Fullerton. Kennedy traffic building, but nothing out of the ordinary. No accidents to report. Same for the Edens. But further west on I-90, the Jane Addams Tollway, there's a disabled vehicle blocking the left lane. It doesn't say where that's at. There we go, at Elmhurst Road. So that is on the Jane Addams westbound at Elmhurst Road. That disabled vehicle is blocking the left lane, so keep that in mind. Eisenhower and Stevenson looking okay. Southside expressways have been quiet all morning. Off the expressways, we have a crash in the city. Looks like, Chief, a road is closed now. Ashland is closed between Harrison and Congress due to an overturned car on Ashland Avenue. That should never happen, obviously.
Well, this morning we saw somebody with the nose of the car into the embankment, buried in a 45-mile-an-hour spot in the expressway, and she's outside chatting on her cell phone.
Yeah, that was a first. But Ashland is closed right now, and I know a lot of people take Ashland as they're, you know, getting on the road this morning, so that's closed between Harrison and Congress. An overturned vehicle, so a serious crash on Ashland Avenue. Crews are on the scene there. Only other crash on the radar is in the northwest suburbs. Gilmer Road at Route 83. There is an accident causing delays. Weather today, lots of sunshine, warm temperatures, some humidity, but on the lakefront, it's going to be pleasant. A cool breeze, a high of 80. Further inland, though, will be in the mid to upper 80s and more humidity. Right now, it is sunny and 72 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 104 today. Right now, it's clear and 77. In sports, Cubs lost to the Braves last night 3-2. White Sox were doubled up by the Red Sox 6-3. Tim Anderson left the game with an ankle injury. Diamondbacks lost to the Dodgers 3-2. And the College World Series final is one game apiece. Vanderbilt beat Michigan last night 4-1, so the deciding game three is tonight. A 6 p.m. first pitch between the Wolverines and the Commodores.
Chief. If you had a skybox, I'd go. What about Joel? Why doesn't he have a skybox for us?
I'm surprised, you know, he didn't make the trek out there. He's got dough.
Yeah, and he's... I don't think he can get a ticket for the skybox. I don't know. He's the in crowd. Maybe we can get him a ticket. I have something here for you, Russell.
Okay, dokie.
We'll change subjects a little bit since the market's not going crazier today, and we've kind of beat the market this week to death with the different stuff coming out with the meeting this weekend. So we're kind of in a little wait and hold. This is a fairly serious attempt to show what people make different majors in college. And concentrations, what you end up with is making money, your average mid-career pay and your average starting pay. And I'm kind of surprised.
Okay.
I mean, whenever I see something like this, I go in and I go, I must know something about this. And then, of course, I look.
I'm stunned by the variance between starting pay and mid-career pay in some of these different, shall we say, walks of life. First of all, can you tell me what STEM means? I'm sure you can. STEM majors.
Oh, yeah. Science, technology, engineering, and math.
I'm glad I have you for that, because I would not have known that. This goes to show you, I suppose.
Or math. I'm sure that I didn't say that perfectly.
You did. Did it exactly perfectly.
Okay.
Name me the mid-career pay, the highest priced of any of this stuff. I mean, I would, in this day and age, considering how many people I've got in oil stocks and in the XLE, which, by the way, we've had a pretty outstanding week finally in there. What do you suppose the in this in both starting pay and mid-career pay, the biggest number?
Is it petroleum engineering?
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, actually, it's not fair that I know this. I'm visiting with a godson that I have down here in Memphis. He just finished very high up in his class. Got a full ride to Texas to do a master's degree in petroleum engineering in 5 years, and he plans on going into that industry for the very reason that we're talking about right now.
Well, but the weird part is you go down this top 10 here, or top 11, and we'll get into the other stuff in a second, but this is the top 10, well, the STEM people. Second is, well, as you work your way down, it's kind of weird. The second is, I would never have guessed this, operations, research, and industrial engineering, regulation of advanced analytical methods to large industries and businesses and so forth. I suppose there's a little bit of supply chain management in that, too. They start at 79 on average. But their mid-career, however, is only 166. So they start almost as high as the petroleum guys, but the mid-career guys, you don't get the raises along the way. Well, 166 isn't bad, but this is a weird one. The next two, actuarial mathematics, which, you know, obviously insurance companies and people, and University of Illinois, I think, has, I'm going to say something politically incorrect here, but I don't care. I'm going to say that they have a very solid actuarial graduate program, and I'm going to say almost all of it is people from out of this country because they pay more. University of Illinois should the trustees there, in my mind, should go to jail. I know somebody who got I won't say what science because people know who the hell I was talking about, got only one grade in 4 years, less than an A, and he or she applied to the graduate program and got flushed because they're foreigners paying more money. I think that's abominable, you know, that those guys look at the money like that when we're talking about a state university.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. When I was in undergrad, and I was not a very good student. We've covered that before, but I ended up getting into the Master of Science in Finance program at the University of Memphis, and I was probably the 12th or 13th person in a row from my family to go to Memphis. Or Memphis State at the time.
You were a legacy,
and I needed the supplemental income of a graduate assistantship or whatever to in order to break even by the time I was done with graduate school, because I was also working a job, and they didn't get me one. And one of the professors even outright told me. He said, you know, we would prefer to use students that come here from other countries. They're not allowed to work anywhere else. They don't have to leave for spring break. They're always available, and they're better labor for us. And so, you know, I took it and understood their logic and delivered pizza to get through the graduate school. And then at the end, you actually have an oral exam where they can quiz you on anything. And they quizzed me, I passed orals, and then they said, is there anything that you would like to tell us about your experience here? And I said, don't ever ask me for a dime. I said, yeah. I wasn't ugly about it. I just said, look, you should just know that I've been very loyal to this place. My family, I'm in my father's house right now. Now, and there's Memphis State stuff everywhere. So, but, you know, you didn't help me out when I needed it, so just don't ever ask me for money in the future.
Just buzz off.
30 years down the road,
I have stuck with that one. I'll guest lecture at the business school, but I will never give them a dime. And I told the three professors that, and they said, we can see that. You should pass it on to other people. I just left it at that. So that what Illinois is doing is extremely short-sighted as well. And the kid that I just mentioned, he got a full ride to Texas. He wanted to go to Illinois, and Illinois didn't offer him a dime. And the issue with that is, demographically, Illinois over the long term, the university is going to screw themselves up as well. All the SEC schools are bending over backwards to get kids from Hinsdale Central to come down there because they want to build up their domestic alumni base to being a national alumni base. And they're going to end up being better schools 20 or 30 years down the road for it.
Well, the reason why I'm watching Vanderbilt, well, obviously, Joel and I have been buddies forever, so I know people went to Michigan, so I'd like to see Michigan win. But you know what? A lot of people from Chicago are going to Vanderbilt. A lot of people are getting, getting nice deals. And anyway, this next one here, this is an interesting one. 3 and 4, depending on how you look at it. It's always depending on how you look at it, right, Russell? An actuarial mathematics person, before I get wung off by me ragging about the University of Illinois, starting salary, 54.7, which is relatively low on his list. Chemical and biomolecular engineering, 71.
Yeah, that's. I think a lot of those jobs go into end up going into some sort of academic type research, and that might be why you see a low pay on that.
Well, no, it's they're almost $18,000 higher than the actuarial guys starting out. They're 71.9 versus 54.7. But this is weird. Mid career, the actuarial guy or lady is up to 158, where the chemical and biomolecular person it only goes to 138. So they start out 18 grand higher, and by the time they're 35, they're 20 grand lower, which is interesting.
Yeah, well,
same thing here.
Maybe I'm trying to debate that.
We just lost you here, bud. Are you anywhere?
I'm here.
All right.
Here.
Same thing with building science. Analysis of the physical phenomenon that affects buildings. If you're they start out at 50 grand and they make it to 135 mid-career. So it's not just the starting. Sarah, but let's go down to stuff like you and me, because we're not those kind of people. Now here's your STEM is great, but students do well with other majors as well. Government. You start out at 50 grand, I don't know where, but mid-career, you're 101. International business management.
Does teaching count as government?
No, teaching's going to be in here somewhere. Humanities included. Okay. Japanese language, you start at 50 and you're mid-career at 106. French literature, you start out at 42. And so you do much better in Japanese language. It's
harder.
Well, but international relations, 40. What is, I have a question. I mean, I sure as hell don't want to ask him, but Maddie and I know a gentleman in our, who lives in our building, and he's I'm going to say he's one of the top staffers down to, on your side, the Republican side, because I have no side now, at the legislature. Mm-hmm. Really, really bright kid. Nice as hell. You can't say anything right. I could never say anything bad about the guy. I mean, he's the chief staffer for, I'm going to say, the one of the top two or three Republican senators. I don't know which one it is. He's told me, but I forgot. What do you suppose he makes?
As a top staffer?
Yeah. I think it's 50 or 40. It's got to be enough to live on. I mean, he's got
barely enough to live on, 60 or so. Because AOC, when she got into office, she said that she couldn't believe how the low pay for all of the congressional staff, and felt like they should all get paid a lot more.
Well, they got
to be a low number.
Well, I mean, but for him, he's got they got a little efficiency. You know, must be a courtyard by Marriott or something down there where when they're in session, he has a little whatever you want to call those things, efficiency, and he can keep his clothes and stuff down there. They at least cover that for him. I have no idea, but that's a whole lot different.
I mean, if he was in Washington, for God's sake, he'd have to be hot bunking with four other people. How does somebody make an...
Oh, yeah. I would assume the young people are doing that.
Well, then the representatives... Didn't the guy from Wisconsin sleep in his office? The speaker?
Yeah.
I don't see how you pull that off.
You know what? I've done that before.
When were you Speaker of the House?
Well, back in the day, this is going to be a quick... I'll be quick. Back in the day when I lived in Atlanta, I lived there during the Olympics, and the apartment complex that I lived in was offering to sublet on your behalf during the Olympics, and the sublet was like 3 months' rent. So I joined a health club for a month, slept on the couch in my office, and showered there, and scored basically big money for the moment. So it's doable. You just got to belong to a health club.
What was the health club like, a mile away, where you're driving a car in your bath towel or what?
Of course, nobody cared about that.
That had to be a look,
you know. Don't love of the 90s.
All right, let me get this
straight. It was the health club was in the same, you know.
Oh, all right, so
same I'm building getting, that I worked in.
I'm getting this picture now of pajama bottoms with some animals on them and a cardigan sweater heading to the foot shower.
That's right. With toothbrush in my mouth, oh, I got God. On the elevator to go downstairs and walk off the courtyard.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying it.
But no, really, I've known people that have done that, where they don't really have a true living space, and when they're getting ready to go out, they go to their health club and get ready at the health. I mean, that's what they use it for.
I know. Yeah, I guess
it's, so. It's doable. It's very doable, and I'm almost 1,000% certain that. Congressmen have their own health club.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And that's what they do.
So,
I just, the idea that, you know, if one of your staffers gets there 10 minutes early, you're piling off the sofa in your PJs. I mean, it's not a look I necessarily would want for my Speaker of the House.
Yeah. Oh,
just saying, you know. Especially.
Yeah, I was a quirky hedge fund guy.
Anyway, International Business and Finance, you started 57. And you top your mid career is 105, so what this thing is telling me is that just because you're in the humanities doesn't mean you're broke. I mean, you can actually do okay if you're European history started 49 and 95. I mean, it's not like you can't live on 95 teaching European history. So, we get a little of this though. Politics. What do you suppose the definition of politics is here?
Who knows?
Because
you major in political science, and then I don't know.
Yeah, it's
that would be a hard one to define, because isn't the ultimate goal to get elected to something?
You would think. Well, I mean, how many
wouldn't be for me? But
well, I mean, if you're, I think you want to at least run. You want to at least have a name. Although some people don't. I mean, what do you suppose the people who work in the White House make? Does anybody even know? People must know. I don't know. I mean, what if you're an economist? What if you're one of the economists that works for Larry Kudlow? I mean, you're not there long enough.
I really have no idea.
But I don't
I'd
think,
love to have that job.
But I don't think those people, I mean, if even if you're there for two terms, do you even qualify for a pension in 6-7 years? I don't know. Do you?
Honestly have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, we think these guys are making all this cash.
It says here that Trump has a lot fewer, he has 20% fewer employees than Obama had, but it doesn't say, well
he loses a couple of weeks.
I'm sure the numbers are all over the place, but his payroll, the White House office payroll is about $35 million, and he's got 374 staffers, so the average is under 100,000.
You wonder a guy like that, and when I say this, he would be a guy a lot, I would think, a lot like us, Russell, in some ways. If all of a sudden we landed that job, I've never even been to the White House. I don't know who's supposed to be where, who's supposed to do what. I'd see a bunch of desks, and I'd say, "What do those guys do?" I have no idea what the 300 people in the White House do working for the guy. I mean, when he got there, he probably didn't either. I wonder if he still does. I'm not saying that. That's not a shot either.
Here we go. I found some numbers. 23 assistants to the president, who are the highest salary. The highest salary in the White House is $179,700.
Is that Munchkin or no? He's a secretary. What about? Is it going to be Larry Kudlow? One of those guys.
The first one, Sarah Huckabee, Sanders, John Bolton, John Kelly, Lawrence Kudlow, Steve Miller, and Kellyanne Conway. Those are the people that make that much money. I'm going to tell you what. That is not enough money for me to put up with. That would not be enough money for me to put up with the amount of
Would you rather
that some of these people have put up with.
I'm going to say that you'd much rather be an alderman at virtually the same salary.
Oh, easily.
Easily.
After all the stuff.
Easily. I mean, plus alderman's a part-time
job. You know, the superintendent of the two of District 86 and 181, which are out where I am, the high school and the grade school, they actually make a lot more than that.
Oh, sure they do.
Yeah.
Well, the guy...
This article is by our friend Adam Antieski, who we had on once.
Yeah. We should get him back.
He's the one that knows all this stuff.
You know what? Let's get him back. Who invited him? Was it Maddie or did you invite him?
That was me.
Why don't you ask him back?
I'll see if I can track him down again.
Well, I'm going to say that my friends at the Fed say that Powell is nowhere near the highest paid guy in the Fed.
Oh, I'm sure.
The governors make like a buck and a half. Buck 60 or something.
Yeah.
Why, you know, I mean, I'm going to say, how can I say this? I'll be one of these people that has an opinion. Without knowing anything about the other 49 states, I'm going to say, by definition, and the idea that it's a part-time thing and what you can do and the fact that you get a pension, there can be no better political job than an alderman in the city of Chicago.
Oh, God, no.
Without knowing anything about Wyoming or North Dakota or whatever, the Illinois with this, where you can actually be a lawyer in a law firm representing people against the city, you know, that kind of crap, when you're making $150,000 a year and you've got, you get $1 million for staff and cars and stuff, well, and you get a pension.
Yeah, I'm wondering right now if the aldermen, if their staff actually get paid more than people that work in the White House. Which I would not be the least surprised.
Well, I think the number. By next week I'll have this number because it's probably, I think it's $1.2 million, $1.1 million. Somebody, one of the listeners will know exactly, and that's for office expense, copiers, all that stuff,
right?
And people, and then there's another couple hundred you can use either for like an extra person or for a driver or something. So you can get your limo guy. That's why they're always anxious to pass a tax for parking because they don't pay parking, you know, type of thing. But I mean,
a lot of those guys are receiving pensions for other things that they've done for the. That they've retired from.
Oh, God, yeah.
And they're still aldermen.
It's special. SP Futures now only up 775. What do you think this weekend, Russell, as my most knowledgeable foreign guy? Anything going to come out of this meeting?
Probably a lot of the same.
So you don't
I don't see a breakthrough.
You don't? Okay, I don't either. I was hoping you were going to say that you did, because anyway, you did not.
No,
though.
I don't.
SP Futures up 775, NASDAQ Futures up 30. Never going to see you, or you're always going to be on the road?
I had some family stuff to take care of here.
Right.
Next week is the 4th of July, right?
Yeah, let's figure it a week after.
Yeah, maybe the week after.
All right, bud. All right. Take care of yourself. All right. Well, I'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What do we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.